Today, leaky boats after a bruising April, May. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to Post, covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In this week's market review, we look at the action around the world, starting in the US, Europe, Asia and Australia, and we'll also look at gold, oil and crypto in passing. And the news is not good for those believing in a return of bull markets, supported by a Fed put. Actually, with inflation running hard, central banks will lift rates, and as yet markets are not fully pricing in the risks of this change. Why would they? As there are many who profit from transactions, any transactions, so of course they are talking their book. Now, hope that the Fed can lift rates to counter persistently high inflation without tipping the US economy into recession are fading, further fraying market sentiment. The first quarter earnings season overall has been better than expected so far. Nearly half of the S&P 500 companies have reported through to Thursday, and 81% of them have topped Wall Street's expectations, typically about 66% beat estimates. But the percentage of individual investors describing their six-month outlook for stocks as bearish surged to its highest level this week since 2009 in the latest AAII sentiment survey. At the same time, optimism remains at an unusually low level. Central banks are the key focus next week, with meetings in Australia, the UK and the US. The University of Michigan said in its latest consumer survey, which was released on Friday, that many Americans believe the Fed will have a hard time succeeding with its goal of providing a soft landing for the economy from aggressive rate hikes planned by the central bank to contain runaway inflation. The goal of a soft landing will be more difficult to achieve given the uncertainties that now prevail, raising prospects for a halt or even a temporary reversal in the Fed's interest rate policies, Richard Curtin, chief economist of the Consumer Survey, said in the university's final consumer poll for April. The probability of consumers reaching a tipping point will increasingly depend on prospects for a strong labour market and continued wage gains, Curtin said. The costs of that renewed strength is an accelerated wage price spiral. The weakness in the economy, spawned in part by the liquidation of bloated inventories, has only just begun. The Commerce Department's preliminary estimate for first quarter growth on Thursday showed that gross domestic product unexpectedly shrank to an annualized rate of 1.4%. Of that, 0.84 percentage points was due to a reduction in business holding of goods. None of this should be a surprise. As far back as December, there were signs that a build-up in excess inventories in the last half of 2021 would lead to a cut in production and orders after American businesses stockpiled goods in anticipation of robust holiday sales that ended up being rather tepid. Of the 2.3% growth in the third quarter of 2021, 2.2 percentage points was due to inventory building and 5.3 points of the fourth quarter's 6.9% gain. Companies stocked up on inventories in late 2021 to avoid snags in the supply chain during the holidays, but consumers held back. Real personal consumption expenditures, which accounts for about 71% of total GDP, rose just 1.3% in the third quarter and 1.8% in the fourth, and followed by an only 1.8% rise in the first quarter. So there's lots of inventory yet to be unloaded. Real retail sales fell 0.7% in March from February, and consumer confidence in the future plunged 28% in April after a year earlier, according to that Michigan sentiment survey. Supply of goods will increase even as demand weakens. Some 60 ships with imports from Asia are waiting to be unloaded at the port of Los Angeles and Long Beach, according to the Marine Exchange of Southern California. Those floating inventory vessels are down from the January peak of 109, but are still about triple the earlier norm. Also, there are hidden inventories in the guise of partially built vehicles that will hit the market when the computer chips needed to complete them arrive. And households also hold excess inventories while at home. During the pandemic, they bought lots of exercise equipment, televisions, computer games, and kitchen appliances. That pushed up spending on durable goods 18% last year. It'll be years before those goods wear out. And meanwhile, look for profit-killing markdowns as businesses work off excess inventories. Further declines in economic activity will reduce inventory pressure, as will the easing of supply chain bottlenecks and waning frictions from reopening the economy. And also, economic weakness will probably retard the Federal Reserve credit tightening campaign. Nevertheless, the central bank has been behind the inflation curve and will no doubt continue to raise interest rates and shrink its portfolio of bonds until it sees the whites of the recession's eyes. Decades ago, business cycles were largely inventory cycles, but inventories only exist in goods since services are consumed as produced. And now consumer services, at 61% of consumer spending, up from 39% in 1947, while goods purchases have dropped from 61% of the total to 39%. And nevertheless, inventory cycles will exist and the current one will probably speed up and intensify the business downturn ahead. And so to the US on Friday, where technology stocks extended losses as shares of what might have once been market darlings at the height of the pandemic headed for their worst monthly drop since the global financial crisis. Amazon led the decline with a 14% drop. That's the worst since 2006, as the e-commerce giant's build-out during the pandemic proved to be too much amid waning consumer demand. While Bank of America slashed its price target for Amazon by 10%, it also rotated a buy on the stock, calling its top FANG pick of 2022. Bank of America said it sees strength in Amazon's cloud business and that the company has a track record of finding efficiencies after big investment cycles. But Amazon was on track for its worst day since 2007. It fell more than 15% at one point. The NASDAQ 100 retreated 4.5%, bringing its losses to 13% for the month. That's the most since October 2008. And the NASDAQ injured its worst month since 2008. Now it's lost more than 21% so far this year, its worst start in a year ever. Apple was far more modestly lower after it tipped supply chain hurdles, primarily because of China's COVID-19 troubles, which are expected to peak this quarter. The tech giant delivered a record quarter of services revenue amid growing installed base, but increasing macro uncertainty, inflationary pressures will likely result in lower product demand during 2022, Credit Suisse said after lifting its price target on the stock to $169 from $168. The slew of tech earnings seen this week from mega-cap tech, including Alphabet, Meta Platforms, Microsoft Corporation, Apple and Amazon, which, by the way, collectively make up more than a quarter of the S&P 500 weighting, have propelled the market for years. And now we're going to have to get back to more of an equilibrium, Eric Ditton, President and CEO of the Wealth Alliance, said on Friday. These stocks, as we've said for a long time, are just way over-owned. Semiconductor stocks also played a role in the broader market sell-off as Intel Corp fell nearly 7% following weaker than expected second quarter guidance amid supply chain bottlenecks and softer PC demand. In other news, Tesla closed in the red after Chief Executive Elon Musk said he wouldn't be selling more shares to fund his $44 billion Twitter takeover deal. ExxonMobil Corp slipped 2.24% after it took a $3.4 billion write-down due to its exit from Russia. Chevron Corporation dropped 3.16% after its first quarter profit underwhelmed. And meanwhile, the S&P 500 was 3.6% lower, with every major sector in the red. The S&P 500 has fallen 13% so far in 2022. That's the steepest four-month decline to start any year since 1939. And at the close in New York, the Dow had fallen 939 points, dipping below 33,000 points, declining 2.77% to 32,977. The VIX was 11.4% higher to 33.4, just to add insult to injury. For the week, the S&P 500 lost 3.3%, the Nasdaq shed 3.9%, and the Dow declined 2.5%. A busy earnings season has largely helped temper losses during a turbulent year, even with the notable disappointments. Yet fears of tightening monetary policy at the Federal Reserve, combined with COVID-19 lockdowns in China and Russia's war in Ukraine, has dented sentiment, especially for frothy growth shares that have future profits at risk with higher interest rates. Key tech giants have been keeping the stock averages from falling even further than they have already, so it looks like April is going to end on a sour note, wrote Matt Maley, chief market strategist at Miller Tabak & Co., noting the benchmark gains on Thursday on results from Meta Platforms, But experience tells us that these kinds of wild intraday moves and wild day-to-day moves that we have experienced on many days in recent weeks are signs of an unhealthy market. Tech companies are set to show a profit contraction of 1.2% for the first quarter, compared with growth of 12% for the rest of the market, according to Credit Suisse's Jonathan Guler. Large tech firms have also beat earnings by 2.3% versus 8.6% for the rest, his data shows. The losses come as investors are assessing risks for a number of macro headwinds amid economic data that paints a positive picture of business demand. Treasuries declined, taking the 10-year US yield to 2.9%. In foreign exchange markets, the yen snapped a slide while staying near 20-year lows, and the euro, pound and commodity-linked currencies made gains while the dollar dipped. Oil fell, easing earlier gains. The figures underscore the debate about how much scope the US central bank has to tighten policy before the economy cracks. Traders are now pricing in a near equal chance that policymakers will raise interest rates by 75 basis points in June, following a half-point move that's expected at their meeting next week. What's happening here is we're moving away from this period in which a rising tide is lifting all boats, Emily Rowland, co-chief investment strategist at John Hancock Investment Management, said. We no longer have ultra-accommodative Fed policy. We no longer have fiscal stimulus and speculative risk-taking. And now we are getting to see what the fundamentals actually look like for technology firms. And we are seeing a big divergence between some of the winners and some of the losers. Adding to fears on Wall Street, data showed the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, that's the Fed-favoured measure of inflation, shot up 0.9% in March after climbing 0.5% in February. First quarter US labour costs surged by the most in 21 years, pointing to rising wage inflation, which supports Federal Reserve policy tightening ahead of its scheduled meeting next week. The operating assumption in the market at the moment is that the Fed has sufficient flexibility to ratchet up the pace of hiking in response to any further acceleration of inflationary pressures, he said. Now, the pan-European Stoxx 600 index rose 0.74%, but the MSCI's gauge of stocks across the globe shed 1.88%. And on the last trading day of April, the global index was on course for its biggest monthly decline since March 2020. Russia's ruble hit a two-year peak against the dollar and the euro on Friday as capital controls helped it weather another larger-than-expected interest rate cut, and Russia appeared to make a last-gasp effort to avoid a default. The dollar index fell 0.415%, with the euro up 0.47% to 1.0543, and the Japanese yen strengthened 0.8% versus the greenback at 129.82. Oil prices fell on Friday, reversing late in the volatile session, pulled down by the US heating oil contract that plummeted by more than 20% at one point on the day of its expiration. US crude oil futures settled at $104.69, down 67 cents or 0.64%, and Brent crude settled at $109.34, up 1.63%. Gold prices gave up some gains after earlier rallying by as much as 1.3% when the dollar retreated, and the precious metal is set to end the month lower on bets of aggressive Fed policy tightening. The GDP data and the cost index for employment data showed that inflation is still running fairly hot. This is generally supportive of gold, said Edward Meir, an analyst with EDF Man Capital Markets. Spot gold was last up 0.1% to $1,895 an ounce. The world's much-touted hedge against inflation is again finding it difficult to live up to its billing, usurped by its rival's biggest rally in 7 years. Gold finished April down almost 2%, despite a 1% rise on Friday, marking its second monthly loss since the start of 2022, despite holding above the relatively bullish level of 1,900 an ounce. Gold's decline came as the dollar index, which pits the greenback against six other major currencies, soared 4.6% for April. That's the most since January 2015. And of the 20 trading sessions for April, the dollar index had only declined in four, in one of the most remarkable winning streaks for the greenback. The dollar's outsized rally came in anticipation of a higher rate regime that the Federal Reserve is expected to adopt over the remainder of 2022 and possibly into 2023 as the central bank aims to contain US inflation growth, which of course is at its fastest pace in four decades. The dollar rally has been relentless and it's been a real drag on the yellow metal, which begs the question, is anything going to stop the dollar in the near term? Asked Craig Earlham, analyst online trading platform Onya. If not, what does that mean for gold? Just on April the 18th, gold hit its sixth week high of $2,003 on concerns that the US could run into recession from aggressive Fed actions to control inflation. Gold typically acts as a hedge against economic and political fears. A succession of Fed speakers had, however, smoothed some market worries that the economy could turn negative from the central bank's attempts to put a lid on price pressures, growing at their fastest pace in 40 years. While fears of a hard landing for the economy have not evaporated, optimism, especially over the sterling labour market, have won over some pessimists. That sent the dollar, the chief beneficiary of a rate hike, rallying instead, making gold another safe haven suffer. It's been an awful couple of weeks for gold since breaking above $2,000 for the first time in over a month, Erlam noted. Gold will continue to see safe haven and inflation appeal, so I don't see the recent rate of decline continuing even if the dollar remains strong. That said, there isn't much of a bullish case for the yellow metal if the dollar continues to tear higher. And after soaring to a nine-month high of $27.50 an ounce on March the 8th, as it joined gold and other commodities rallying in the aftermath of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, silver has now fallen on relatively hard times. On Friday's Asian trading, silver's front-month futures on New York's COMEX hovered just under $24 an ounce after opening the year at $22.84. While that left the price just slightly in the positive for the year, the 7% drop for all of April would be silver's biggest for a month since the 8% slump in September 2021. Compared with gold, silver was in a much worse spot. Gold was up over 4% on the year and looked poised to finish April down just 2%. Even so, in Asian trading on Friday, COMEX gold futures hovered at just 1,910, sharply off the Russian invasion high of almost $2,079 on March the 8th. Silver at times appears to be like the forgotten stepchild of the precious metals bucket, rarely eliciting the kind of excitement found in gold, which, of course, a fortnight ago was above $2,000 again as an inflation hedge and as a safe haven buy. Well, maybe. The problem with silver, though, is that while it's officially clumped into the precious metals bucket, along with gold, palladium and platinum, it really is more of an industrial metal in terms of its applications and demand. More than 50% of silver's demand originates from industrial use as a malleable metal. It's just as good as gold for jewellery making. It's also a proven conductor of electricity and is used extensively in the manufacture of electronic components. Industrial demand for silver has been a little slow to take off this year as sectors of the US and global economy continue to suffer from supply chain disruptions caused by the two-year-long coronavirus pandemic. Also, prices of silver are typically joined at the hip with gold, rising and falling in tandem with the yellow metal. Silver trades at a fraction of the price of gold and is often called the poor man's gold. So much, so there's even a gold-silver ratio that serves as a benchmark for the valuation of silver. It's 2.7 in the negative for silver, which is finishing April down 7% for its biggest loss in 7 months. Now, over in the UK, house prices rose for a ninth consecutive month in April as the housing market continued to defy an escalating cost of living crisis. The 0.3% gain marked the longest winning streak since 2016 and lifted the average price of a home to a record £267,620, according to a survey by Nationwide Building Society. Values were 12.1% higher than a year earlier. The surge has been driven by a shortage of homes for sale and pandemic-driven demand for larger properties away from the urban centres. But Nationwide warned the mounting pressure on consumer spending power, with energy bills soaring and inflation at a 30-year high, is likely to cool the momentum. We continue to expect the housing market to slow in the quarters ahead, Robert Gardner, chief economist at Nationwide, said in a statement on Friday. The squeeze on household incomes is set to intensify. The growth in April was short of the 0.8% gain expected by economists, and the annual pace of house price inflation slowed from 14.3% in March. Other headwinds facing the market included stretched affordability for first-time buyers and the prospect of further interest rate increases from the Bank of England as it battles to bring down inflation. In a sign of potential trouble for the housing market, a BOE survey carried out in March found that banks planned to significantly scale back mortgage lending amid fears that borrowers could start to default on their debts. It's surprising that conditions have remained so buoyant given mounting pressure on household budgets, which has severely dented consumer confidence, Gardner said. Consumers' expectations of their own personal finances over the next 12 months have dropped to levels last seen during the depths of the global financial crisis more than a decade ago. A typical home has jumped almost £52,000 since the pandemic struck in early 2020. That's a 22% jump in prices. Nationwide also cited savings built up during the pandemic and a buoyant labour market as factors underpinning the market. The increase has been led by rural areas such as Wales and South West England, while London trailed behind. And survey findings published by Nationwide show that the race for space is continuing, though to a lesser extent than a year ago. The housing boom has helped boost lenders such as NatWest Group, which saw gross new mortgage lending reach £9.1 billion in the first 3 months of the year, up from £8.4 billion in the previous quarter, according to earnings data released on Friday. We continue to see strong demand coming through, and we'll support our customers on that, NatWest Chief Executive Officer Alison Rose said in a call with reporters. It remains a very attractive asset for us, and there are good returns continuing to drive the growth. The FTSE closed up 0.47% on Friday to 7,544. In Europe, economic expansion in the Eurozone began 2022 on a weak footing, underscoring the damage from soaring energy costs and worsening supply snarls following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Output increased 0.2% from the previous quarter in the 3 months through to March, matching the median estimate from economists. The figure reflects a contraction in Italy, stagnation in France, and weaker than expected growth in Spain. Germany, the region's largest economy, narrowly avoided a recession. Whether the euro area can continue to grow will depend largely on what happens in Asia and Ukraine. Strict lockdowns in the former and Russia's invasion of the latter are choking already strained supply chains, dampening confidence and pushing inflation from one record to another. In April, consumer prices rose 7.5% from a year ago. And while the European Central Bank predicts a slowdown in the second half, the rate probably won't fall below 4% this year. Officials are preparing to end bond buying early in the third quarter, and some, including the vice president, have signaled interest rates could rise early as July. German stocks were mixed after the close on Friday, as gains in the retail chemicals and food beverages sectors led shares higher, while losses in the construction, financial services and telecom sector led shares lower. At the close, the DAX gained 0.84% to 14,097. In Asia, China has shown few signs of loosening its zero COVID control policies as the country continued to battle its worst outbreak in 2 years. Some businesses have resumed production in Shanghai and northern China, but the capital city of Beijing temporarily closed Friday a large luxury mall and non-essential businesses in one area to control an ongoing spike in cases stemming from the highly transmissible Omicron variant. China's top leaders said in the meeting on Friday that COVID and the Ukraine crisis have increased challenges and uncertainties for the domestic economy, according to state media. Chinese President Xi Jinping headed the economic meeting held regularly with China's leadership, known as the Politburo. The leaders noted the mutation's new characteristics and said the country should stick to its dynamic zero COVID policy, state media said. That implies the COVID policy will not ease in the near term, said Bruce Pang, head of macro and strategy research at China Renaissance. He said the meeting reflects how headwinds for growth are stronger than previously expected and noted leaders calling for more policy support in order for China to achieve the GDP target of around 5.5%. Many investment banks have cut their China GDP forecast, one as low as 3.9%, in the wake of the new COVID cases and controls. Mainland China reported more than 5,600 new confirmed cases with symptoms for Thursday, with the majority resulting from cases in Shanghai that had previously showed no symptoms. Specific virus control measures may sacrifice the convenience of life for some regions and people, affecting the economy in the short term for some localities, Liang Huyan, head of the COVID response expert group under the National Health Commission, said in the press conference on Friday. But that will allow the largest area and number of people to work and live normally for the cost-effective balance, he said. Shanghai has tried to allow some major business to resume production by releasing a list about 2 weeks ago with 666 companies that could get priority for restarting work. Just over a third, or 247 of the companies, are foreign-funded businesses, the Ministry of Commerce said on Thursday. German automaker Volkswagen and US electric car company Tesla have resumed production, the ministry said, noting other foreign businesses have applied to join the second batch of whitelisted companies. The ministry said it would make every effort to ensure resumption of work. By the way, merchants have also had to pay a lot more for logistics costs, now about 25% of the selling price, up from 15% or 20% at the start of the pandemic. Diane Wang, founder and chairperson of Chinese e-commerce site DHgate, told CNBC on Thursday. The company primarily works with small Chinese companies selling abroad, but with existing inventory, stay-home and lockdown orders would have to last for at least 3 months in order to really affect the businesses, she said. The Shanghai Index was up 2.41% to 3,047 on Friday, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong rose 4.1% to 1,098. Now, down here in Australia, Australian shares clawed back some of the losses suffered from their midweek slump on Friday, advancing for a second consecutive session, thanks to gains posted by all share market sectors. Sidebar, that'll be reversed on Monday. The S&P ASX 200 rose 1.1% or 78 points to 7,435 on Friday, but posted a decline of 0.5% for the shortened four-day trading week. The local market took a strong lead from Wall Street, where all three major benchmarks surged in a relief rally on Thursday. Robust results from Facebook owner Meta caused its share price to rally 17.6%, of course, and that was really the reason why Thursday was strong. That led to a 0.8% rise for the Australian share market at the open, a level it kept up for most of Friday's session before experiencing a rush of buying heading into the close. Shares in PointsBet led the market, jumping 10.7% to $3, after the bookmaker said its turnover rose 54% to $1.4 billion in the 3 months ended March 31 from a year earlier. Origin Energy said higher gas prices caused March quarter sales from its Australian Pacific LNG businesses in Queensland to more than double. Shares in the company firmed 1.9% to $6.84. The tech rally on Wall Street was mirrored in the local market, with Tero Payments adding 6.4% to $1.25, Life360 rose 5.8% to $4.03, Codan climbed 5.3% to $7.20, Email Payments firmed 4.9% to $1.60. All four major banks advanced, supporting the local market. CBA rose 0.63% to $103.88, ANZ lifted 0.78% to $27.30. NAB was up 1.37% to 32.63, and Westpac was up 1.19% to 23.87. Sentiment was tempered by shares in Aussie software giant Atlassian, which is listed on the NASDAQ, which plunged 16% in aftermarket trading after it said it swung into a loss in the third quarter. And ResMed declined 4.1% to 29.14 after both its third quarter earnings and revenue fell below analyst estimates. Kogan.com dived 13.9% to $3.91 after reporting its gross profit fell 11% to $41 million in January to March from the year earlier period, while gross sales dropped 3.8% to $262 million. And takeover target Ramsay Health Care said its unaudited group net profit slid 38.9% in the 9 months ended March 31 to $201.6 million from the previous corresponding period. The stock edged 0.5% lower to $81.11. And finally, in crypto land, Bitcoin was down another 3.08% to 38,627 at this time, and Ether was down 4.18% to 2,813. Bitcoin is poised to see its first monthly decline since January, with rising borrowing rates curtailing investors' appetite for riskier assets. The largest cryptocurrency by market value fell on Friday to below 40,000 and is now down nearly 14% in April. Ether, the next largest token, was also lower, and that slumped around 13%. Bitcoin, despite all the positive news on adoption by institutions, still failed to gain traction higher on the poor macro backdrop, especially rate hikes in the US, said Tiong Hung, chief executive of Hong Kong-based crypto investment firm Satori Research. Interest from retail has also decreased as we see the funding rates between futures and physical collapsed. Meanwhile, ApeCoin, that's a token tied to the popular Bored Apes NFTs, is whipsawing investors amid a relatively sluggish broader crypto market. Launched in the middle of March, the coin has a market value of around $6.4 billion. Demand for ApeCoin soared this week in the anticipation of the token's virtual land sales in its metaverse, which is scheduled for May 1. It traded in a range of $16 to $26.91 this week and was at $22.12 on Friday, according to updated data. The spike was driven by over $40 million in perpetual swap liquidations in the last 24 hours, mostly concentrated in short positions on OKX, Minfans, and FTX, said Joshua Lim, head of derivatives at New York-based Genesis Global Trading. We've seen a pickup in borrowing demand and derivatives interest in the ape US dollar options as trading firms anticipate some reversion in price after the land sales end, Lim said. So here again, we see major financial institutions muscling into the cryptos market. And once again, I warn again, and once again, I must stress that crypto is now mainstream. It is no longer out there. It's no longer something which is unique and different. It is completely contaminated by the major players playing the old games. And more broadly, the markets are very weak and I think will remain weak. So the question really is, in May, should you sell and go away? May not be a bad idea, actually, because I think the next month or two or even three or four will be pretty wobbly. More downside risk ahead, I think. Very little upside from here. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.